Welcome, everyone. Happy St. Bracket Day. Welcome to the Sports Debaters on IFM Sports. I'm Michael Zucker, along with Bobby York. We're excited to be here on one of the best sports days slash weeks of the year. Unfortunately, our third partner, Matt Eric, could not be here tonight. He has some prior thespian engagements. Rob, what's going on with that?
What's going on, guys? Bobby, so our buddy Matt, who's, you know, the third member of the Sports Debater crew, been really pumped up for the show. We had a little bit of a setback last week. Mike came through this week, got us off down the air. It's going to be a regular spot, 8 o'clock every Tuesday night. And I called Matt, let him know that, you know, we're going to be going on for the first time. And, he's going to a Broadway show with his mom. His mom's in town, which is very sweet. Shout out to Michelle. But, yeah, very disappointment and, you know, just a very clear lack of commitment, especially for a first show.
And obviously his heart is in a different place now, that it's the Tuesday after Selection Sunday, which is basically a holiday to me every single year. And he's thinking more along the lines of sitting and watching a Broadway show with his mother than talking about NCAA March Madness with us. So we're going to, believe me, we're going to give him some crap for that when we see him. But we'll expect him back next week. So obviously the brackets came out, and I think that when CBS every year does that Selection Sunday, that's one of the most exciting non-actual sporting events of the year. I know I sit glued and I've been mulling over the bracket. And I think I'm one of the only people in America right now who is actually not picking Kentucky. So, are you picking Kentucky?
I'm picking Kentucky. It's the obvious pick to me. I've been watching Kentucky blow teams out all year. I watched them dominate all weekend against the best, you know, the best the SEC had to offer. And to me, it's pretty much a no-brainer. It's Kentucky versus the field. Every single other team out there this year is trying to beat Kentucky. And if you watch Kentucky play, and if you've watched Kentucky play even, you know, 20 minutes this year, I don't see how anybody in their right mind could pick anybody but Kentucky. So very kind of interested to, you know, to hear about who you're picking and why you don't think they're going to take it.
Yeah, so the number to call in is 646-200-3230. We would love to hear who you think is going to win the tournament, especially if you don't think it's going to be Kentucky, because clearly they've rolled the entire season. They have about 9 NBA players. Their length and athleticism is superior to everybody in America by a wide margin. And, you know, they're one of the most athletic teams in years. So I've never seen, you know, I can't remember a team, maybe since the, you know, mid-2000s Florida team with Donovan that had Horford and Noah and all those NBA players where they won 2 straight titles. I can't think of a team with such NBA talent that's kind of going into the tournament with just an athletic edge to everybody else. So I would love to hear anybody calling in and giving a reason that's against Kentucky, because I will give mine. I think that, you know, obviously a team has not gone undefeated since Bobby Knight's Indiana team in the late 70s. And, you know, typically what happens to a team like Kentucky, they've gone, you know, they've rolled through the SEC. They've had some close games. Obviously, they've survived. But it's, you know, a favorite loses in the NCAA tournament. Remember, this is a one-game season every single week. And every team is playing Kentucky with absolutely nothing to lose, pressure on Kentucky. And the way to beat a team like that is to get red hot, to get unconscious, and shoot an incredible percentage from the field that, you know, is honestly maybe a once-in-a-season type, type output. And if you start getting like that and you keep a game close with them, well, remember, they've had a lot of games that have gone down to the wire and they haven't lost. A team like that, you know, they're thinking, the fact that they're undefeated is in their head. You take them and you keep the game close down to maybe 5 minutes left, 6 minutes left, and you're able to maybe take a lead on them. Whether you take a lead on them or you cut it close or you put the pressure on them, they're not just playing the pressure with being a number one seed going for a title. They're playing with the pressure of going undefeated. And these are all young kids, freshmen, who've never played in big games like this. And they might get tight versus a team who they're thinking, we're so much better than them, and they will not miss, and it gets frustrating. And then you know, a team, you know, like maybe a four seed, maybe a team like an Iowa State who they would meet later on, who can go unconscious from the field and has lanes. You know, they might just start getting the feeling that we can play with these guys and then everybody else and the whole Kentucky team and Calipari gets a lot tighter, and that's how these teams end up being upset.
I mean, while I see what you're talking about, and I agree that teams do get tight, especially, you know, when you're the hunted rather than being the hunters, I kind of think in this situation, I've watched the Wildcats basically play all year. They played a couple tight games. They had a really tight game in conference with LSU. They had a couple tight games against Arkansas. I just don't see this team getting tight. This is a team that made it to the finals last year, and yes, they have a lot of new players, but they got Cauley Stein, the big center that was kind of blown up this year as maybe a top five pick. They got the Harrison twins who were in the finals last year. They lost to a Shabazz Napier UConn team. But they've got, you know, this is a team that has been there before. And as I said, like, they just don't seem to have that panic button. They have a coach, John Calipari, arguably the best coach in the nation right now, absolutely 100% the best recruiter in the nation. You know, some might say that Coach K is the best coach. You know, you might see, you know, Coach Few, then Gonzaga always has a solid team. But Calipari is bringing in these All-Americans who are top five picks every single year. And this year he happens to have the most. I don't know if you've watched Kentucky play. If the starters come out a little bit slow, Calipari will take all five guys off, and he's bringing all these, you know, All-Americans right back into the game. They probably have, like you said, nine guys who are going to be NBA, maybe even more than that. They probably have six or seven first-round picks who would get drafted in the first round if they came out next year. And although, like, you know, when we think about college basketball in the day and age where, you know, there's a ton of one-and-done, they happen to have a few veteran players who've been, you know, down this road before, especially last year. And I don't know, Mike. I'm very interested to see who you think is going to pull an upset and knock them off, because I'm going Wildcats all day.
I completely agree with the fact that they don't have a panic button, and it almost seems like in times when they have close games, they turn it on at the end when they need to turn it on and basically say, look, we got to win the game now. We can. We're better. We're longer. We're more athletic. And they get it done. I'm saying that those players have not played that many games in the magnitude of being a 30-0 and playing in a tight game. They're the best team, but there's a lot of teams who, if they get hot, can get Duke is long and can shoot and coached by Coach K. You know, a team like Gonzaga, they have size that could go down low and at least keep games close.
I'll tell you, I've watched teams try to go down low with Kentucky. Those two boys in the middle, Cauley Stein and Towns, no one's going low with them. They got 2 7-foot NBA-ready players. And I hear what you're saying in terms of, you know, a team can get hot and shoot lights out and maybe, like, throw up a prayer. But the way Kentucky plays, they don't play running gun. You know, they can run and gun. They can run up and down with the court with the best of them, but they're gonna play their style. They're gonna set up their offense. Their point guard Uwis is, you know, some of the nicest passes I've ever seen from a freshman.
I'm not debating how superior they are to every other team in America. I'm saying that going undefeated, and going through and navigating an NCAA tournament after you've gone undefeated the entire year and maintaining that and not losing. Not having one off day, that is hard, and it doesn't happen. So when you go an entire season without losing, and I'm not going to even, you know, use the close games they've had as having any relevance because, you know, let's face it, teams like Kentucky, they play, you know, when they play their gauntlet and they play big teams, you know, they're not going to come out with everything they got sometimes versus a lower-end SEC team. They just don't. But in the NCAA tournament, they are being – gun for, not to mention the fact that when a team just starts making a ton of threes, and I'm not saying they're necessarily even winning the game, you could keep a game close, and all the pressure is going to be on Kentucky, and they know it, and they're young, and they're not the youngest Kentucky team that they have been, but I'm skeptical of a team being able manage a crisis situation regardless of how good they are, when you have been undefeated for an entire season and you haven't faced, been in one particular game where you are just so off to a point that a team who gets hot could take it down to 3 minutes left, and you start panicking a little bit, and all of a sudden, you know, you could see that how tense you get, and then maybe they make a three with a minute and a half left,
mm-hmm.
and you could just see the mental toll start taking on, the where the athletic factor all of a sudden in that final 90 seconds doesn't mean anything. It happens all the time.
The way I see it is Kentucky, you know, the fact that they have Kentucky on their chest always means that they're the hunters, no matter what, all right? There's a few programs, Duke, UNC, Kentucky, no matter when you play them, if you're, you know, the Louisville, if you're like, you know, Louisville's a top program, if you're the second-tier programs, you're always going to give your best effort to Kentucky. I am under the impression that, although I hear what you're saying, teams are going to be, you know, giving Kentucky their best shot in the tournament, they've been giving Kentucky their best shot all year. And I would even say Kentucky hasn't even given their best shot yet. I mean, they have a degree, but I was watching the game on, it must have been Sunday, the SEC Championship, and I watched the game Saturday too, the semifinals. And Kentucky played Arkansas. And I forget who they played on Saturday, but they played, it was Auburn on Saturday. Auburn, Kentucky was a 23.5 point favorite. I bet Kentucky. What did Kentucky do? They covered by 24. Winner, winner. On Sunday, I looked at the spread, 13.5. What did Kentucky do? Won by 15. So I hear what you're saying in terms of there being maybe a late shot pressure situation. I really don't think that these games are going to be that close. I know that the first, you know, maybe when they get to the, you know, semifinals, final four, and they play like an athletic team like a Wisconsin, like an Arizona, a defensive team like a Wisconsin, I don't think there's anybody in the Midwest. And, you know, just to give a little background, we're looking at Kansas, we're looking at Wichita State, we're looking at Maryland. None of those teams can play with Kentucky this year. None of them can play with them. It's not going to be a close game until they get to the final four. I have Arizona in the final four to meet them. Arizona's a great team. They got Stanley Johnson, one of the best freshmen in the, you know, in the nation this year, maybe a top three pick next year. Kentucky has three of those guys. So I hear what you're saying in terms of, you know, if it gets tight and someone hits a three, Kentucky, you know, hasn't been down this road before. They've been down many roads. They haven't been down this road before. I think they're battle-tested. I think they've been battle-tested all year. I think their coach, Calipari, is, you know, is in their ear, basically telling them that, you know, what to expect. He's been down this road however many times, you know what I mean? After he made the finals 2 years ago, 3 years ago, he won the championship with Anthony Davis. When he was in Memphis, he made it to the finals and should have won it, you know, if he had free throws. This team is battle-tested.
Yeah, but they're not going to roll through the NCAA tournament. It doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen.
I think that they're going to roll through the first round, two or three rounds. They're going to roll through two. They're going to roll through to the Elite Eight at the very least. And I don't know. It doesn't happen,
but the NCAA,
like you said, how many teams go undefeated? That doesn't happen.
The NCAA tournament is a known monster of teams going on runs, playing above their head. And there are teams, which a team like Notre Dame, who can shoot their lights out of the building. Duke, who we know Duke is one of the top three teams in the country. Those teams, they are not on Kentucky's level. But they start getting hot, and they roll, and Kentucky shows up, maybe beating teams by 25. And then all of a sudden, it's back and forth. They come out a little slow because maybe, you know, maybe they had, you know, a little bit of a, you know, they're not as in tune with the intensity that another team brings. And if a game is kept close enough, teams, there are going to be close games. There are no NCAA tournament teams. The early 90s Duke teams, the Florida teams, 2001 Duke, you know, any great teams you could think about, they don't blow out the entire NCAA tournament. And when you go undefeated for an entire regular season, you're going to play in a tough game at some point or another against a very good team, whether it's the Elite Eight, whether it's the Final Four, whether it's the title game. And how are they going to handle 5 minutes left, maybe in a pressure situation they haven't been in all season, where their season is on the line and they're playing a Duke or an Arizona. And you know what? Duke is not afraid of them. And Duke has NBA players. And, you know, maybe they'll start out slow and they'll be losing. And then they'll make some big run and they'll take the lead and they'll look like, okay, you know, they'll feel like, all right, we got this game now just like we should. And then before you know it, a team like, you know, a team maybe Villanova comes down the floor, hits a three, and they look at each other like, did they just really make that three on us after we were supposed to take over this game? And you just, you buy your time to the end of the game. And if you're in it and you have a chance to win the game, that's how these teams knock off big teams in the NCAA tournament. I've seen it so many times. We've all seen so many times where the big team gets knocked off because all a team was able to do was really keep a game enough in striking distance where they had a shot to make some big plays at the end of a game, maybe hit a couple of threes or, you know, or get a couple of lucky bounces that they shouldn't have gotten. And that's how you take a team down like that. And when a team is undefeated for the entire regular season, which never happens, and a team is probably going to roll through a few rounds of the NCAA tournament because I don't see a team like Purdue or Cincinnati or Maryland having enough to go up with them, I'm telling you, someone's going to give them a game. And there's a reason undefeated seasons don't happen very often. And I really think that while they are the best team, they might be the best team since those Florida teams. I am skeptical. Well, they might be better. I'm saying probably since then. Okay. Those teams won two titles in a row and have, you know, had Noah Horford. They had about five NBA players. Brewer. I would be very, very hesitant to just say they're going to run through this tournament because it doesn't happen. Who do you think if there are any teams that could give them a challenge, who do you think can beat them?
I think a team, like I said before, I would say Arizona could beat them. Arizona has the athletes. They have the guard play, and I said they have Stanley Johnson, freshman stud. But I don't see anyone beating them. I mean, a team like Duke, who also has, you know, the history that Kentucky has. Coach K obviously can match up strategy-wise with Coach Calipari. He's probably a better basketball coach than Calipari, just not a better recruiter. They have Okafor, who can play the middle better than probably anyone that Kentucky has, although, you know, Karl Anthony Towns might have something to say about that. You know, I would say two out of 10 times those teams have a chance of beating UConn. But just to go back to a point you just said, like, if you just go back 3 years ago, when you had, like, the Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Deron Lamb, those dudes on Kentucky who won the championship, they kind of went through the tournament without much of a challenge. They won every game by about double digits. They beat Kansas in the final, and although they ended up winning the game by 9, I remember watching that game. At no point during the game did I think that Kansas had a chance of winning that game. Kansas' best player was Thomas Robinson. It was Anthony Davis, before Anthony Davis was even really fully developed. And, I mean, so, you know, I think we only really have to go back 3 years to look at a perfect example of a team that kind of coasted through the tournament, a team that I picked that year to win because I see the same qualities in that team and that John Calipari recruited and coached team that I see in this one. You see studs. You got a Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that Anthony Davis and Kidd-Gilchrist either went 1-2 in that draft or 1-3 in that draft. Like, just
I just think that –
well, that that doesn't happen very often,
but it just happened a couple years ago with the same exact team.
Well, who do you think right now in college basketball, who do you think is the best player in the country?
I would say probably Okafor on Duke's probably the most athletically
– I think Okafor could step into the NBA offensively right now and score 17 points a game.
But as in the past couple of weeks, all I
heard – Anthony Davis was the best player. You see what Anthony Davis does now? He was the best player by a mile that year.
No, he wasn't. He was a good defensive player. He was a blocking machine. But he maybe averaged, like, I think 10 points a game, something like that. So he was athletic, and he's come into his own since he joined the Pelicans.
Yeah, he was the best player in college basketball by a lot that year.
You could watch a game, and you could physically see that he just looked different on the court.
And that's what I see when I see Kentucky now. They physically look like different teams. Other teams are in shell shock when this team is running up and down the court.
But college, look at guys like, you know, you have to go back far. Look at guys like Napier, guys, you know, when you go back to – even before that with UConn with Walker, when you go back to a Syracuse with Carmelo Anthony,
players can take over tournaments. I think an Okafor could take over a game versus Kentucky where, yeah, Kentucky's a better team, but the basketball is a sport where one dominant player can take over a game. And I think that unlike maybe that year where Kentucky ran through it, I think that Duke has a player that if they met, he could take over a game and beat them.
But he can't with the team because you're talking about Okafor is a big man. Okafor needs to get close to the basket and he's going to have two guys. He's going to have Willie Cauley-Stein and Karl Anthony Towns guarding him in the key. I hear what you're saying. Napier's the point guard.
Guess what?
Napier's the point
Duke
guard.
Duke also is born up is a really, really capable team of getting hot from three completely up there, you know, as with anybody. And they have Coach K. And Duke, I think Duke, on a given night, they're not as good of a team as Kentucky, top to bottom. Nobody's been close.
Okay.
Duke could beat Kentucky on a given night.
All right, let's change the pace up a little bit. So, you know, it's a good segue. So, who are your final four and who's your winner? It sounds like you're picking Duke to win the whole thing. Am I mistaken by that?
I'm picking Duke because if I'm not going to pick Kentucky and I have my reservations at picking Kentucky, I would have loved this Kentucky for them if they would have lost the game in the SEC tournament or a month ago.
Okay.
I'm picking Duke because other than Kentucky, I think if there is a team that has the makeup to win a title, I think it's Duke. I think they will meet in the final. And quite frankly, how great is that for college basketball to have Kentucky and Duke meet in the final?
That's all you really want. That's Christian Leighton there. That's the two, you know, arguably, you know, you got UNC, you got Indiana, and you got the, you know, the Bill Walton, yeah, John Wooden, and UCLA teams. But
it's like since I can remember watching college basketball, you know, as far back as I go, you got Kentucky, you got Duke, and those are the two, you know, prize universities in all college.
It's like
Notre Dame versus Alabama or Dallas Cowboys versus, you know, Patriots. Two brand names that are transcendent of just a region. Everybody will tune in for that kind of game. I think that's the matchup that everyone's hoping for.
All right, so you got Kentucky, you got Duke in your Final Four, and just for the, you know, just for the aspect of filling out brackets, who else do you have going in the Final Four?
I like Villanova.
All right.
Because I think Villanova has a unique combination of size and guard play. You know, they won't have to play Kentucky until the final if they got there. I would pick them. You know, I like their versatility a little bit more than Virginia. I do like Virginia, but I'd pick Villanova from that side to match up with Duke. And I really like I like the teams in Duke's side of the bracket. I don't think it's going to be easy for Duke. I think Gonzaga could knock off Duke. I just think Duke has more overall athleticism and balance top to bottom, and they have an Okafor. And I don't even mean to sound redundant when I say it, but basketball is a unique sport where if you have the best player on the court, it gives you such an advantage. And I'll take that. I also like Iowa State a lot. They've really come on. They deserve the seeding that they got. They're a little bit under the radar. They don't get a lot of respect because they are Iowa State. They can shoot the lights out of the gym, which doesn't probably not that surprising because they're, you know, an Iowa team.
Iowa State's in the same bracket as Duke, so you don't have Iowa
State. No, I'm just saying Duke's bracket, I think, is a little difficult. I like Iowa State, I like Gonzaga, I like Duke, I'm picking Duke. But I like those teams. I will pick Duke to get by them.
So you got Villanova versus Duke. Duke taking that one. You got Kentucky versus you in the Final Four.
I'm going to pick Arizona.
All right.
And this was the toughest Elite Eight matchup for me, picking between Wisconsin and Arizona. I do like North Carolina a lot also. You know, but I just love Wisconsin's program is just always so built for consistent NCAA tournament play. They're always able to shoot. They can always bang. They're like, they're exactly what you would want out of a Big Ten team year in and year out. I like them. I think Arizona's coming out a little bit better. I think, you know, if you asked me that maybe 3 months ago, I would say Wisconsin. I like Arizona now, and I think Arizona's the kind of team that I when it comes to every aspect of the game, shooting, rebounding, speed, you know, working together as a unit, depth, I like them a little bit more than Wisconsin. That was the toughest game for me to pick. So my Final Four is Kentucky, Arizona, for Villanova, and Duke.
All right. I mean, you kind of stole a little bit of my spotlight in kind of a couple of shout-outs you gave. I obviously, you know, as everyone probably understands at this point, I got Kentucky winning the whole thing. I also have Arizona and Wisconsin playing in the Elite Eight. I'm taking Arizona, and I'm taking it for the payback method. Last year, Wisconsin and Arizona played in the Elite Eight to a trip to try to get a trip to Jerry's World in Dallas in the Final Four. Wisconsin beat them 64-63. Compton is probably a better team than they had last year. Frank Kaminsky might be the best player in the league, in the country. When you asked me about Okafor, you know, I kind of left him out. But Arizona, I watched them play all year in the Pac-12. They won their conference going away, destroyed the competition, beat up on Oregon. And as I said, they got Stanley Johnson. This kid is a freshman. He's got a temper on him, which I like in the NCAA. It's like a Shabazz Napier intensity. And I think that they're just a much more athletic team than Wisconsin. Wisconsin is a team that's going to grind you out. They're going to play solid defense. They don't have the, you know, the speed to keep up with an Arizona team that's going to get out in the break. And I think that Arizona and Kentucky, when they meet in the Final Four, that's going to be Arizona's – that's going to be Kentucky's biggest challenge. It's going to be a Wildcat versus Wildcat Final Four. Kentucky's going to win. I'd much rather see that be the finals, but unfortunately, you know, that's not how the brackets lie. If we go back over to the East, I like Villanova, although I don't think they're tested. What college basketball has done to the Big East in the past couple of years is a travesty. The Big East tournament used to be, outside the NCAA tournament, one of my favorite spectacles to watch on television. You had Syracuse, you had UConn, you had Louisville, you had so many powerhouses, Georgetown, Villanova playing at the Garden in our backyard in the city. And I don't think Villanova's been tested this year. You know, there's no Syracuse there. There's no UConn there anymore. UConn's playing in the American Conference, whatever the hell that is. So Villanova can shoot lights out. I see them actually trailing St. John's at the half I think maybe last weekend. They ended up winning by like 40 points because they went on a run. They scored like 110 points and ended up winning by 40 against St. John's. So they're an explosive team. However, I'm thinking Iowa State in that conference and in that bracket. You kind of, like I said, you kind of stole my thunder a little bit. I just saw Iowa State play Kansas, a perennial powerhouse, every single year in the Big 12 finals, and that is such an athletic team. Fred Hoiberg, ex-Chicago Bull. And, you know, I'm not going to lie and say I watch every Iowa State game, but as, like, I just happen to know that, like, come tournament time, that's always a team that I see, you know, in contention. It's always a sleeper pick. This year they're 3 seed, so they won't be a sleeper pick. And I just feel like, from what I've seen, they're a team that, you know, has extreme athleticism, as you said. In the Big 12 tournament, they were down a total of 75 points to a random team. So, you know, in their last games, they came back. They won every single one of those games. So I think that they're a team that can keep up with Villanova. And Villanova's a team that lives and dies from the outside. Eventually, you can live that way for so long, eventually you're going to die that way. And like in Iowa State in the East,
they lived it versus Georgetown in that the biggest upset of all time.
We're talking about back in the 80s?
That's what leading back to the point when we're talking about a Kentucky team losing. I'm picking teams where I think that they could shoot. I mean, that's how you've got to beat a team like Kentucky. You've got to go off.
I just don't think any team's going to go off enough to beat Kentucky. But can I finish my bracket, please? I'm a little worried. I'm in the Midwest.
All right, I'll let you do it. Go ahead.
You going to let me pick my bracket? All
right.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm going in the Midwest. I'm also going to be going with Duke because, I mean, I can't pick against Duke. I'm a Duke fan. I love Coach K. Okafor, like you said, is a beast. I just don't see them, you know, when push comes to shove. I'm hoping for a Duke-Kentucky final. That's what I'm picking. I just don't see Okafor dominating enough inside to beat both Towns and Cauley Stein off the boards. And I think that Kentucky guard play is better. I think they're a deeper team, and that's where my that's where my bracket's gonna fall.
Okay, so you got Kentucky over Duke. I have Duke over Kentucky. I think we both want to see that as the final. I think it's understood that probably the most interesting final.
That's what they find the most popular final that 50% of everyone's gonna pick. So, you know, when you're filling out your brackets, it's important to get the early rounds right. So if everyone's picking Kentucky versus Duke, it's the other two teams that are in the Final Four. It's your Elite Eight teams. It's your Sweet 16 teams that's going to make or break your bracket for the most part.
Well, we were talking about how this upcoming weekend and next upcoming weekend are, you know, maybe the most fun weekends, you know, from a Thursday to Sunday, just 4 days in a row of sports, period, because, you know, everybody does a bracket now, whether you're a huge fan or you're not a huge fan, and you're glued to the TV the entire time, and this is the couple of weekends where you actually still really generally feel really good about your bracket because you'll go through a couple of days and you won't even realize that you'll be watching your two seeds win and you'll feel awesome about it. And then, you know, obviously the week after that, you start losing Final Four teams. So this next couple of upcoming weekends I'm excited for because it's maybe two of the most fun weekends in sports.
I think it is the best two weekends in sports. And I think that, you know, basically what you're looking at is the Super Bowl every single game. It's winner take all, loser goes home. You know, it's better than the NBA where you're playing best out of seven. You know, teams like the Spurs, they don't care if they lose the first game. Teams like Kentucky, you lose the first game, you sleep for a little bit, it's done. 39-1.
And let me give a shout-out to my alma mater, the Albany Great Danes, third straight time. I don't know if anybody saw the three-pointer that they made, basically a time expired by a player who his mother the week before who was battling cancer.
A couple weeks before,
was battling cancer, made a 3-7 in the tournament. So that was pretty awesome. You know, I think their run will probably end against Oklahoma, but three tournaments in a row. So, for everybody.
I also have to give a shout out to our buddy Matt, who's hopefully, you know, probably somewhere in the opening act right now of the Broadway show. His alma mater, Buffalo Bulls, are also in the tournament, and they're actually a 12-5, you know, team coached by Bobby Hurley, ex Duke player, ex NBA player, and you know, a team that a lot of people are actually giving a shot in the 5-12 matchup, which always produces winners. I believe they play, I don't really quite remember off the top of my head because you can pick them. They play West Virginia. And a lot of teams are saying that Buffalo has a good chance of advancing. They actually have a shot against Maryland, too, although I have Maryland beating Buffalo. I think Matt told me he picked Buffalo to eventually come across Kentucky. And Buffalo actually gave Kentucky one of their best games this year. Buffalo actually was up by 5 at the half against Kentucky until the Wildcats turned it on and, kept going undefeated throughout the year. But so of the three of us, the only team whose alma mater did not make it is the Binghamton Bearcats. And, you know, that might be we might have to be in the air for another 80 years before the Bearcats make the tournament.
Well, that's what happens when you go to the hardest academic SUNY school to get into, is that that's going to be the one that's unfortunately not going to be playing March Madness.
We did make it once. We made it once a couple of years ago, but then
had a few sanctions in there.
We had about 30 sanctions. Guys were stealing from Walmart, getting caught with weed, weapons. You gotta recruit dirty in order to make this tournament once every 30 years if you're the Binghamton Bearcats.
The Binghamton Blue Chips.
Exactly. That's basically what it was. It was without Shaquille O'Neal on that team.
Well, if you had Nick Nolte, then maybe you would have, you know, at least hit it a little bit longer. All right, we're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk some NFL free agency, which to me is, you know, my favorite thing of this time of year, maybe over college basketball, if I'm going to be honest. So we'll take a break and we'll be back on to talk about that. And call in again and participate, 646-200-3230.
Now this here ain't no ordinary love, and I'll be hooked on you just like a drug. 'Cause you got what I'm needing, damn my body's screaming. I can't go one day without your love. Now this ain't something that I usually do, but for some reason I can't keep my cool. I met you, must be something special. Got me shook up with the things you do.
When we make love, we make love.
So gone, and your body feels so right, this can't be wrong. When you're gone, I feel uneasy. Baby, don't you tease me. I'm waiting for you soon as you get home. I know your love got me strung out. And I'm not afraid to say it, girl, no doubt. Ever since the day I met you, must be something special. You show me what good love is all about.
Sending this one out to my man Killer B. No doubt, indeed. For that weed, you know what I'm saying? That old real shit. There's a war going on outside, no man is safe from. You could run, but you can't hide forever from these streets that we done took. You walking with your head down, scared to look. You shook, cause ain't no such things as halfway crooks. They never around when the beef cooks in my part of town. It's similar to Vietnam. Now we all grown up and old, heavy on the cops' control. They better have the riot gear ready, trying to back me and get rock steady. By the Mac one double, I touch you and leave you with not much to go home with. My skin is thick, cause I'll be up in the mix of action. If I'm not at home, puffin' live, relaxing. New York got a nigga depressed, so I wear a slug proof underneath my guest. God bless my soul before I put my foot down and begin to stroll into the drama I built. And all I'm finished beef, you will soon be killed. Put us together, it's like mixing vodka and milk. I'm going out blasting, taking my enemies with me. And if not, they scar, so they will never forget me. Lord, forgive me, the Hennessy got me not knowing how to act. I'm falling and I can't turn back. Or maybe it's the words from my man Killer Black that I can't say, so what's left of untold facts. Until my death, my goal's to stay alive. Survival of the fit, only the strong survive.
Yeah, yeah. We live in this till the day that we die. Survival of the fit, only the strong survive. Still living, we live in this till the day that we die. Survival of the fit, only the strong survive. Still living, we live in this till the day that we die. Survival of the fit, only the strong survive. Still living, we live in this till the day we die.
Trying to get dope, you know when the dope get low, the juice go. But never that, as long as fiends smoke crack, I'll be on the block hustling, count my stacks. No doubt, watching my back and proceed with caution. 5-0 working, no time to get lost in. The system niggas use fake names to get out quick. My brother did it and got back with 2 ounces. I live with one with squads at the block hall. That's my man Twin when he got back to fuck me up, God. But shit happens for a reason. You find out who's the true keepers when you're upstate bleeding. You can't find a shorty the truth to bed with you. Hit with a 2-4 is difficult. While on the streets I try to maintain. Tight with my Lucas hoes like the run game. Some niggas like to trip but I ain't with that tripping shit. I'm like a juice saving dope so I can bit with pushing a Lex. Now I'm set ready to check. No matter how much loot I get, I'm staying in the projects forever. Banks on the blocks, we out clever. And beef, we never separate, grow together. When words come to words, so my peoples come first. Try to react and get the motherfucker feeling served. My crew's all about blue. Fuck looking cute, I'm strictly clip boots. An army certified suits, puffin' nails, lay back, enjoy the smell. In the bridge, getting down, it ain't hard to tell. You better realize.
We live in this till the day that we die. Survivors of the fit, only the strong survive. We live in this till the day that we die.
of the fit, only the strong survive. The life is still there, we live on this till the day that we die. Survival of the fit, only the strong survive. We still there, we live on this till the day that we die. Survival of the fit, only the strong survive. The life is still there, we live on
this till the day that we die. Survival of the fit, only the strong survive. The when your eyes get wide, look alive, let your vibe hold up. Hypnotic stuff like your dead ass paralyzed. You know what I'm saying?
Welcome back to the Sports Debaters. I loved the Mobb Deep plug that just got played in there, and then followed into the Takeover, which was a slam and ruin Mobb Deep's career song. That was a nice little transition. We want to talk about NFL free agency because we haven't addressed it, and there's been a couple of moves or two, if you've been paying attention at all. You know, just some small players like, Dominican Sue changing teams and Darrell Revis. So there's been a few things to talk about. But I think a lot of the big buzz has been about the controversy on how you stand one way or another on the Eagles and Chip Kelly's moves. So, Rob, how do you feel about the strategy of Chip Kelly and the Philadelphia Eagles and what they're doing?
I'm not sure how I feel about it because I don't understand it, to be honest. What Chip Kelly has done in the past two years, he's gotten rid of every top offensive weapon the team has. Yes, his defense has gotten better with, Byron Maxwell coming in, and I guess Kiko Alonso is the guy that has, he's had two knee injuries in a short career, so I think that's a little bit to be determined. I don't see what they've done. Yeah, they brought in DeMarco Murray. I don't think DeMarco Murray is better at all than LeSean McCoy. I think LeSean McCoy is a superior back, especially in a system that Chip Kelly likes to run, get up, runs plays every 20 seconds, whatever it is. LeSean McCoy is a slash back. He's faster than DeMarco Murray.
Well, you get the corner out of it, isn't it? The halfback, and then there's a slashback.
He's a slashback, yeah. He's a slashback. Reggie Bush is a slashback. CJ Spiller is a slashback. LeSean McCoy is a slashback. They're quick. They don't really hit the hole hard. They're not going to go right up the line. And that's what DeMarco Murray does. So why did they bring in Sam Bradford? And maybe, and I'm not sure where you stand on this. Why did you bring in Sam Bradford? Sam Bradford was a number one pick. I have never even seen him play in the NFL. I know he played a couple of games. I've never seen him do play in the NFL. You had a quarterback, Nick Foles, with an NFL arm. Dude, last year, I think he threw 27 touchdowns, maybe 2 interceptions. There were games where he was throwing 6-7 touchdowns a game. He got hurt this year. When he got hurt, the Eagles, they went down. They brought in Sanchez. I like Sanchez. I don't like Sanchez that much. I'm a Jet fan. So now they got Sam Bradford and Mark Sanchez on their roster. And Jordan Matthews, second-year player, is their best receiver, along with Riley Cooper. I mean, Chip Kelly's a smart coach, much smarter at football than I'll ever be. I'll give him that. Maybe he knows what he's doing. It just doesn't make any sense to me. What's your take, Mike?
I would have to say that I like a lot of what Chip Kelly's doing. I like the fact that he's basically saying, he's sending the message out saying, listen, I averaged 30 points a game with Mark Sanchez as my quarterback, playing elite defenses, playing the Carolinas, Seattle, playing teams like Dallas. They scored, over 20 against Green Bay. I mean, these are playoff teams. Nick Foles, I like Nick Foles. Nick Foles isn't 27 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. Guys like, he turned Riley Cooper into a viable, receiver. Jordan Matthews. But his offense was explosive at times last year. Their defense got gashed for a lot of yards. And I think what he was trying to do was basically saying, I have offensive expertise. I can get production anywhere because, let's face it, he has. What he doesn't get production enough out of is his defense, which is not his specialty. So he figured, let me load that up with talent because that's not what I'm known for. And I'm not going to get as much out of my defense as I am out of my offense because I'm an offensive guy. So I'll give up some offensive talent for some defensive talent. Then he brings in a guy like Murray, which if you want to argue Murray versus McCoy, fine. But I think Murray is a better fit because you have – first of all, he hated McCoy when he needed to be run heavy, between the tackles, short yardage. It's known that he was very, very anti-McCoy for being a north-to-south workhorse running back. He's explosive, but you can't count on him as a guy that can really, you know, get those tough yardage, get tough yardage, get him 25 carries, be consistent. You know, he's more of a Barry Sanders type running back, but, you know, not nearly, you know, with the same explosiveness. He's good out of the backfield, but you have a guy who can receive in Sproles who is effective. Sproles was great. He wants a guy who's now, you know, he has his Sproles. He has Polk, who's his short yardage. Now he wants his workhorse versatile back, who might be a little bit better in blocking than McCoy. He might be, he's definitely better as a north-to-south straight, hard-nosed runner. So, while if you want to argue McCoy versus Murray, fine. I think Murray's a better fit considering what you have. And I understand why he's getting rid of guys like, go get Macklin's production from other guys. He will. You don't know who he's going to draft. He just does it. He gets production from Dennis Dixon all the way up to Mark Sanchez, he gets production out of his offense. He brought in defensive guys because that's what he needs, because he's not that. However, the Sam Bradford move, and look, I don't know what's going to happen on draft day. I don't know if he's going to, you know, there's still moves in the waiting in the wings. I question that because Sam Bradford is a better physical talent than Nick Foles and Mark Sanchez. He's had some good numbers in the NFL. He had a really good rookie year with a subpar roster in St. Louis. They were one game away from making the playoffs. He has a lot of potential. He just can't get on the field. So I like him probably better than I do. I understand that move, but that's the one move I'm skeptical about because the dude is like, you know, he'll get a hangnail and he's on the IR. I don't trust him to put the franchise on a guy who's been injured ever since Oklahoma, honestly. And yeah, he played in a spread style system in Oklahoma. I get the fit. I just don't get trusting in his threat that he'll be on the field.
I don't see what you're seeing in his defensive strategy. I see that
he brought in Byron Maxwell. Byron Maxwell was the other guy on Richard Sherman. He was the Cromartie to Regis. Cromartie is a good second cornerback on the team.
But he's building. You can't, you know, most teams are not like the Jets with $60 million cap room where you could just reload a secondary. He's doing it how you have to do it, and you have to do it where you give, you know, you basically do it at the rate where you're going in the right direction. They're going in the right direction. You can't just try to throw everything and try to, like, you know, just because you didn't completely reload a defense doesn't mean you're not doing the right thing.
I hear what you're saying. I mean, he's bringing in injured goods. He's bringing in injured goods. Bradford, like you said, is a walking injury. I mean, I don't think it's even debatable if he's going to get hurt.
I wasn't defending.
Chico Alonso's been injured basically his whole career. And what college did Alonso go to? He went to Oregon.
But Chip Kelly believes that DeMarco Murray is a better fit for his offense.
Okay.
Which I do too. I think McCoy's a better player. But would you give up essentially now getting Murray and Alonzo or just McCoy if he thinks that McCoy isn't a good fit?
But they didn't just give up. They gave up Macklin. They didn't give Macklin the money they could have given to keep him. Last year they gave up Jackson.
Why would you give up Macklin? Why would you give Macklin's
up Macklin? Macklin's a good receiver. Macklin's a good receiver.
You could find a better receiver in the second round. It's the NFL these days. Jordan Matthews, he found late, and Jordan Matthews is good. He could find it. There were six receivers who came in, and it is Chip Kelly's offense. Every receiver is good in Chip Kelly's offense.
We'll see. We'll see what happens when Bradford is not is on the sideline and Sanchez is the quarterback. We'll see how many sub receivers they have with Mark Sanchez.
I don't know.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And you made a point before about you listed a bunch of teams that the Eagles lost to that were playoff teams. You said Dallas. You said Seattle. You said Carolina.
What
was Philly not last year? Philly was not a playoff team last year. So to not be a playoff team last year, and then to give away your two best, you know, as a fantasy owner of LeSean McCoy, and, you know, I'm in a lot of fantasy leagues where Jeremy Maxson beat the hell out of me last year, gave away your two best offensive weapons.
But don't get so caught up in the name.
I'm not getting caught up in the name. I'm getting caught up in the production.
Jeremy Maxson's production is going to be distributed elsewhere in a Chip Kelly offense.
With the right weapons around him, with the quarterback. I mean, I'm a Jets fan. Am I going to draft Brandon Marshall as my first pick of the year because
No, they don't have a quarterback.
Yeah, Bobby,
Sam Bradford is not.
Okay, so Bobby, the one thing that you're overrating is receivers in that offense.
Okay, so maybe I'm overrating Jeremy Maclin a little bit. They brought in an injured quarterback, an injured linebacker, a second-tier cornerback, and a running back who, let's be honest, the Cowboys knew what they were doing last year. DeMarco Murray touched the ball 30 to 40. I'm not going to be exaggerating. The dude touched the ball so many times last year. Dallas knew he was going to be a free agent. He didn't know he was going to go to Philly. That just kind of worked out maybe in their favor. They're going to bring in Adrian Peterson, a fresh back who didn't carry the ball, you know, once last year. And they get, you know.
Adrian Peterson or Darren McFadden?
They're going to get Adrian Peterson as well. They got Darren McFadden today.
They're not going to work. They're not going to work.
Darren McFadden is a pretty good second back when Adrian Peterson is your main back.
Well, they didn't get Peterson yet.
They're going to get Peterson. He's not going back to Minnesota.
All right. Well,
let's neither here nor there.
They're not going to work DeMarco Murray like Dallas. He's not getting 30 carries up the middle.
He was worked that way already, and that's what matters. He was already worked that way. In the NFL lifespan of a running back, is 3 to 4 years. Murray's been in the league for, what, 5, 6 years already? He had more carries last year than anybody,
exactly.
More yards than anybody, and took more
sports
than anybody.
Hello, Rob there? Hey, how you doing? Is Rob there?
Yes, he is. Who's that?
It's V.
Oh, what's going on, V? How's it going, man?
We got a caller. This is V for Vendetta. What's going on?
Not much, man. Did you really say that LeSean McCoy is a better back right now than DeMarco Murray?
I think that LeSean McCoy is a better back for Chip Kelly's system than DeMarco Murray.
Why?
I think it's faster.
It makes no sense.
DeMarco Murray likes to run between the tackles.
What's
that?
So that's what he wants. He wants an inside zone runner. He runs A gap to A gap. That's what he does. He runs everything is inside zone, inside zone, inside zone. That's all he runs. In between the A gaps. That's what he needs. He wants a pounder. He wants one cut vertical. That's what he wants.
What do you think about my point that Dallas beat the hell out of him last year?
That what?
Dallas gave the guy 30 carries a game last year and beat the hell out of him.
Okay, he's not going to get 30 touches. He's got Darren Sproles and Polk back there.
Okay,
you
so
put him in the backfield Sproles at the same time. You have your catching option back, and you have your inside the tackles back. That's exactly what he wants.
And wouldn't that be enough? Why give DeMarco Murray that much money if he's not going to be a feature back? You're paying him to be a feature back on your team.
Because you got to stick it to Dallas too. You got to make it hurt.
That's what you think it is. Try to put a little.
That's exactly what it is. I think he's a great fit. I'm pissed as a Giants fan. I'm pissed. I know Dixon's psyched.
As a Giants fan, are you worried about the Eagles next year?
Yes, absolutely.
You should always be worried about the Eagles in the NFC.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They don't need receivers. Maclin, waste of money. Not worth $11 million. Not even close.
Receivers in the NFL are a waste of – unless your team is maybe a receiver away from putting yourself over the top, you don't spend big money on wide receivers. There's like seven to draft who could step in and be good nowadays. It's about the
exactly.
Offensive line.
Look back at every Super Bowl team in like the past 5 years and see if they had a great receiver on their team. They didn't. Think about it. Think back like Ravens, no. Patriots, no. Like who had a good receiver? Like an overwhelming like Calvin Johnson type.
I'm going to say Green Bay Packers with Rodgers had solid receivers. I'm going to say that Drew Brees when he
yeah,
threw the ball to Jimmy Graham, you know, he's not a traditional wide receiver.
Jimmy Graham wasn't on the same Super Bowl team, but that's neither here nor there.
Oh, wow. Just called you out. What?
Well, let me ask you like this. I'll put it to you like this. To your point, if you went, because I agree with you, if you went and named the 10 best receivers in the league, none of them have a Super Bowl. And Randy Moss and T.O., who in their day were absolutely elite Hall of Famers, they took their teams over the top and took them close, and they never won. Larry Fitzgerald almost won. But those three guys are probably Hall of Famers, and that's about as close as it's come for elite
receivers. Exactly. Receivers overrated. Overrated. That's it. That's my statement for tonight. I'm going to leave it right there. Receivers overrated. Never pay for them. Philly going far next year, and I'm pissed as a Giants fan. I'm out.
I don't know about that.
You got V?
Yeah, he's gone.
And I know V, the football coach, probably knows a lot more about strategy than I will ever know. But
well, V seems to be on my side with this whole Eagle strategy situation. I don't think he brought up a good point about taking it away from the Cowboys, but I think he's not looking to give DeMarco Murray 30 carries a game. He's looking to build an offense where, you know, he can fit every single role with the right fit to build an offense. He's not going to give Jeremy Maclin a big contract. Jeremy Maclin is a good receiver who, let's face it, his numbers look a lot better with Chip Kelly. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like Jeremy Maclin, but I'm not spending money on Jeremy Maclin.
Who stands? Was it Jeremy Shockey at the time?
It was Shockey. Then Marcus Colston, Lance Moore, I think Devery Henderson, Reggie Bush. So they had some weapons, but they weren't great.
The Patriots have won this past year with that Gronkowski. Honestly, for the Patriots won Super Bowl with that Gronkowski. I know he's not a wide receiver.
I just think that you got to assume a Dez Bryant is a difference maker. Calvin Johnson is a difference maker. And, I mean, just look what the Cowboys did this year. Who did they give their money to? They had a choice. They had DeMarco Murray or they had Dez Bryant. Who did they give the money to?
Well, I think that's also because Dez Bryant is a lot better of a receiver than DeMarco Murray's running back, and they got the best offensive line in the league. So you can, you know, I think any running back is going to have success. Also, running back shelf life is a little bit shorter. I think Dez Bryant, I mean, I know they franchise tagged him because I think they're – He has a lot of stability. But I think Dez Bryant at the receiver position, he's more of a freak receiver than Murray is running back. And let's face it, in today's NFL, you know, what teams win with a workhorse running back? It just doesn't happen anymore.
So you're telling me running back is not an important position?
I didn't say running back wasn't an important position.
The workhorse running back is not a necessity. And I agree with you in terms of...
Well, when you have the best offensive line in the NFL, and you have Dez Bryant is... a top five receiver, and you know you can run the ball. You know, if you bring in a guy like McFadden or you bring a guy like AP, you'll run it fine. But you're not going to replace Dez Bryant. Maybe you won't get the same production, but you'll get production with that line. You're not going to get another Dez Bryant.
We're both Jet fans, all right? If you talk to a Giant fan right now, what's the one player they would not want to give up on their roster currently? Who's the one player that the Giant fan says, this is the one guy that we're going to build our team around, this is the one guy that we're keeping on our team, and it's not Eli Manning. Who is he?
Well, it's Odell Beckham Jr.
What position does he play?
Wide receiver.
Thanks.
But do you know what?
I don't say wide receiver is not an important position.
I didn't say it's important. I think Chip Kelly's offense are not paying for one. And I'm saying if you're a Giants fan, yeah, you say that until the day comes Eli is not there anymore and some freaking hack is throwing to Odell Beckham Jr. and you're the Jets, basically, with elite receivers and Santonio Holmes. And, Percy Harvin going on, you know, like on back of milk cartons because you have no quarterback.
Eli is kind of a hack these days, I'm not going to lie to you guys. Eli has the most lucky two-time Super Bowl MVP I've ever seen in my life, but that's an argument for another day. That'll be, you know, during Giants training camp, we can talk about that.
Eli Manning is such a – the look on his face pretty much sums up his entire – like, you look at him, and you can look him in the eye when I'm watching the game, and I'm thinking, like, I can't tell if he's lost or he just is so lost or he's just so out of touch that it's actually a good thing. I can't – and that's how he plays. I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean,
I've never seen a quarterback so erratic and then so unbelievable, like, at times.
He's been unbelievable really two times in his career. Hey, you know, they're pretty – two pretty really good times.
Yeah, I would say those two times were pretty awesome. That guy was – if there's one thing I remember about those Giants Super Bowl runs, it was like, is there a third and seven throw that he did not make every single time? It was like, they weren't explosive. They rushed the passer, and they just moved the chains. And it was – well, I'm not going to say that I hate the Giants, but I am a Jets fan, and it was a little infuriating to watch.
I did enjoy the Patriot games on Super Bowl. I'm not going to lie to you about that either. So, let's just recap. We talked a lot about the Eagles. I'm not even an Eagle fan. I don't really pay the Eagles much mind. I was proven wrong by head football coach in Westchester, V. Thanks for calling in, V, and making me look stupid the first night of the show.
Listen, V, you can call in anytime you want because you can put Bobby in check, and I don't mind, and I don't think Matt will mind either.
Listen, I think Matt would agree with me in terms of Matt's the biggest freaking Jeremy Maclin fan in the entire world.
Well, Matt is also judging what he wants out of a quarterback to see his top 40 times in bench press as a priority. So
that's also a division of throw issue right now. We'll leave it at that. But
Big winner. Matt has a scarf and he's holding his Pinot Noir right now.
Big winner from last week's NFL mayhem. Who would you say?
Other than the Eagles, big winner.
Okay, take away the Eagles. I would say, like, probably, four things. J and then ETS is the big winner from last week. Look, I'm a Jets fan. I tend to be completely objective with it. But they just reloaded their entire roster. Look, I know that their quarterback position, which is probably the position that really just matters more than anything, obviously. But no team has gone from a 4-12 type, that you are what your record says you are, said the tuna. No team has gone from a 4-2, all of a sudden you look at their roster and you're like, wow, this team's pretty good in about 4 days, so I would go with them.
I go Jets. Jets, I think, are, for the same reason you said that the Eagles probably paid top dollar for DeMarco Murray. You got to weaken your, division rival in the Cowboys. That's exactly what the Jets did to the Patriots. Do I think the Jets are better than the Patriots? Absolutely not. One team has Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. One team has Geno Smith / Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Look, you could put Don Bosco, Prex Robster out there with Tom Brady, and they're probably
exactly
beating the Jets.
I think the big winner, I think it's a situation where the rich get richer. I'm going to go with the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, they lost Byron Maxwell. They brought in Kara Williams. Definitely a formidable cornerback to join the Legion of Doom. They re-signed Marshawn Lynch, where a lot of people saw that, the assumption was Lynch was going. There was a rumor that Lynch didn't get that last carry because Pete Carroll didn't want to give him the ball because that would, up his free agency stock, which is, probably not true and one of the craziest football strategies I've ever heard in my life. But, they got a Pro Bowl cornerback, Pro Bowl running back, a top-notch cornerback, and probably the best tight end, maybe Gronkowski. I think it's arguable, but Jimmy Graham's the most athletic tight end, more like a wide receiver. He was not on the same Super Bowl team. That's my mistake, but he's going to have a Super Bowl ring after next year. So my big winner, the Seattle Seahawks. And unfortunately for them, they still have Russell Wilson on his rookie contract. They're going to have to pay him at some point, probably the next year or so. But until they get to that point, this team is just loaded, and they should have won the Super Bowl this year. They obviously won it last year, and, I would have loved to see them go for 3 in a row, personally, because the Jets aren't going to be there yet.
I don't want to rehash this. I really don't want to beat this dead horse.
Is he telling us Super Bowl run?
Yeah. Why couldn't they have just done a damn bring in everybody? You want to bring – if you're Pete Carroll, I apologize to everybody for rehashing this. It's been on my mind for months. If you want to elevate your quarterback to complete stardom and you want to – why didn't you load up everybody in the box in a jumbo ball formation, sell out run, have the dude fake it and roll out and walk it into the end zone in a QB bootleg, holding the ball up over his head with all the counters flashing to win the Super Bowl and have Russell Wilson freaking trot it in? That's just, Pete Carroll instead would rather put his quarterback in a position to lose the Super Bowl by throwing a low percentage pass in a clustered area. But look, I had to rehash it. I apologize. And unfortunately, we're running out of time. So anything you want to end, any thoughts that you want to say before we go?
Yes. Wide receiver is an important position in the NFL, and I stand by that. The Kentucky Wildcats are going to win the national championship. And Matt is going to give us a full recap of whatever the hell he's doing tonight, next week, Tuesday, 8 p.m.
Duke is going to win it. Coach K is going to beat Kentucky like he did, as Christian Laettner knows very well, and Grant Hill and company. And as far as the wide receiver position, I think Matt at his show, he's in the wide receiver position right now. So, Matt, I hope you hear that. And, all right, we'll be on at 8 o'clock again next week, and this will be up on Blog Talk Radio's site, IFM Sports Debaters, and you can find it on sports-debaters.com, along with a couple of podcasts that we're going to do. I got a podcast that's strictly catered to the Jets, and we got some other things. So come again to sports-debaters.com, and we'll see you next week.
All right,
enjoy the basketball, enjoy the wings, enjoy the beer, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Have a good one.